Hey guys, it's episode 600 of all time top 10. I can't believe we're halfway to 1200. What? Anyway, season 13 of this fine program is now in full swing, and we have some mighty fine guests on to help us count down our favorite legendary LA studio musicians, two of which are on the show. Big time shout out and thank you to the enigmatic David Jenkins and the fantabulous Jennifer Jo Oberly, bass playing menches that they are, for joining us in this look at the world of the recording studio and just some of the players that made it big here in the City of Angels, where I'm sitting right now. From the Wrecking Crew to the immediate family and everywhere in between, thousands of the most iconic recordings in music history were made right here in LA and feature some of the best to ever do it. Picks 10 through 6 are ahead in part 1 with our good friends David and Jennifer. Coming up next. Anyway, before we do that, a quick thank you to all the listeners who keep this thing going by engaging with us on social media. We love your interactions, well, most of them anyway, and we thank you for your picks and your votes, especially votes for the bonus track of the week and in our little novelty polls that help us roll out more songs in our ever-expanding playlist, our countdown of the greatest songs we've ever heard, the ATTT 1000. This week, we were feeling a bit nostalgic with three new songs, and we're now about a third of the way through this thing. At number 667, it's Bob Seger with Night Moves. I was asking you guys, what's the all-time Seger song? What's his best? Lots of good suggestions here. Ramblin' Gamblin' Man, Turn the Page, Main Street, Hollywood Nights, Against the Wind, Rock and Roll Never Forgets, Old Time Rock and Roll, Travelin' Man, Beautiful Loser, Till It Shines, Roll Me Away, Get Out of Denver, and Kathmandu. But we love Night Moves. That's our personal favorite. You guys love it too, from what I can tell. Friend Wills Bach on Instagram says, trying to make some front page drive-in news. That's right. Bill says, such a stellar tune. What was that song from 1962 playing in his car? And Shane on Threads says, my man right there. Hashtag Detroit. At number 666, it is Paul Simon with Still Crazy After All These Years. I was asking you guys, what's the best Paul Simon solo album? Great suggestions here. Graceland, There Goes Ryman Simon, the 1970 self-titled album, Rhythm of the Saints, One Trick Pony, So Beautiful or So What, and Hearts and Bones. But we love the title track for Still Crazy After All These Years. Shout out to our friend Morris Brustinski, who we had to have a discussion about the bridge in this song in one of our recent episodes. Love that song. Still Crazy After All These Years. Last but not least, number 665, it's Neil Diamond with Brooklyn Roads. I was asking you guys, what's the best song about nostalgia? We had about 80 or so of these guys from you guys. I'm just going to list off some. This is a lot, though. Thank you so much. Bruce Springsteen, Glory Days, Stevie Wonder, I Wish, Dawes, All Your Favorite Bands, Souvenir by Billy Joel, Old Days by Chicago, Frank Sinatra, It Was a Very Good Year, Those Were the Days by Mary Hopkin, I Remember Everything by John Prine, Cats in the Cradle by Harry Chapin, Jim Croce, Time in a Bottle, Richard Clapton with Blue Bay Blues, Nostalgia by Cracker, Still Ill by The Smiths, The Animals, When I Was Young, The Dead Beat Club by B-52s, Kodachrome from Paul Simon, LCD Sound System, Losing My Edge, Adam Sandler, Listening to the Radio, The Carpenters, Yesterday Once More, The Kinks, Celluloid Heroes, The Way Life's Meant to Be by ELO, Dan Fogelberg, Same Old Auld Lang Syne, Seasons in the Sun, and Don McLean's American Pie, and more, if you can believe it. But Brooklyn Roads from Neil Diamond is the song at number 665. And those three are now added to the playlist. The playlist keep growing. Go find those on Spotify and YouTube and follow along, save them, like them, follow them, however it works. Because they're going to keep growing, and we love doing this. Thanks so much, guys, for all your interactions and stuff. Let's get into this episode, though. Let's kick off season 13 in earnest with David and Jen and talk about our favorite legendary LA studio musicians. Roll the tape.
Hey. It doesn't work for me. I gotta have more cowbell.
Don't blow this for us, Gene!
Could be so selfish, Gene.
Can I just say one thing?
Yeah, baby, just say it.
I'm standing here staring at rock legend Bruce Dickinson.
The cock and a walk, baby.
And if Bruce Dickinson wants more cowbell, we should probably give him more cowbell.
Say, baby.
And Bobby, you are right. I am being selfish. But the last time I checked, we don't have a whole lot of songs that feature the cowbell.
I gotta have more cowbell, baby.
But I'd be doing myself a disservice and every member of this band if I didn't perform the hell out of this.
Guess what? I got a fever. And the only prescription is more cowbell.
Top 10 Legendary LA Studio Musicians, Part 1.
Too soon, I don't know how to live without my handler's throat. I fight him always and still. Oh, darling, it's so sweet. You think you know how crazy I am. You say you don't spook easy, you won't go, but I know, and I pray that you will. Fast as you can, baby, run, free yourself up as fast as you can.
Hey everybody, welcome to another marvelously motivated episode. We're doing 2-for-1.
Okay.
Of all time, top 10. Yay! Welcome back to the show. Welcome back to the show, everybody. I'm your host, Ben Eisen, and with me here in Goodlist Studios, Silver Lake, California, are two folks you have heard once before, if you're a longtime listener. But you never got to hear the full in-person pod experience. Hanging out with our friend David Jenkins over there. Hey, David.
Greetings. Hello.
Hello. And David, the last time you heard him, it was Underrated Bass Players, if you recall. And he was joined in that episode by our other special guest, the delightful Jennifer Jo Oberly, everybody.
Yay. Hi, guys. Oh, wow. So we were here together the last time.
You were on Zoom.
We were on Zoom.
I remember that.
Yes.
Hey.
During the dark times.
We had the avatar, right? Didn't we have like the sunglasses on?
That's
and everything?
Right.
I think so.
We were being a little silly.
And we looked at Rolling Stone. It was the Rolling Stone's list of the greatest bass players, and we picked all picks that were left off that list.
Yes.
Yeah. Underrated. So
Tommy Cogbill.
That's right. I learned who that was when we did that episode. But David and Jennifer are here. Thank you guys for being here. We're kicking off season 13 of All Time Top 10. We've been doing it that long.
Incredible.
Our first proper episode of the season. It is Top 10 LA. What was it? Top 10 Legendary LA Studio Musicians.
Okay.
Yeah. And we, through text and whatnot, we, you know, it's, these things have a way of going on forever, just trying to get it set up. We had Chris Price on board for a while doing this. It was me and David and Chris, and it was just like studio musicians. And Chris had to do his own thing. He's going to be on in a few weeks, everybody. Don't worry. But we needed a new recruit. We got Jennifer.
Hi. I'm curious.
and what?
So what made you decide to make it LA session musicians?
Well, I think it's because there's just so many. We get 10 total, and we had to narrow it down somehow, right?
Oh, okay.
And looking at LA through its studio musicians, it's kind of neat because there's these like eras,
right,
and factions, and there's still way too many.
Well, right? I agree, but I also want to say too, it was a little challenging for me to have singled out session musicians because a lot of the times they're paired up with someone else that's part of the same crew.
Yep.
Yeah. When we talk about LA musicians, but New York musicians, it's a totally different breed. So I was so excited.
Do they not have crews out there? I'm not too familiar.
I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen any. Well,
they kind of did in the 60s and 70s, and maybe in the 80s too. There's sort of parallels
to
the LA and the Nashville scenes of a group of people that tended to work more than everybody else or work together more.
The A-team.
Basically,
Nashville had its
A-team. But we don't seem to talk much about them, do we?
No, because
LA stories are more fun anyway.
They didn't get them, you know, they don't have a movie made about them or stuff like that. But, I mean, and there's also, you know, there's the Motown team. I mean, there's other places where it's more like specific, like these people just worked on records for this company.
Right.
Well, I think they're also probably just super busy, or they just don't care about this, the recognition.
Yeah.
Like other people.
I mean, that kind of is like baked into the thing if it's LA.
Yeah. You know? Right. It's like, oh, here's my resume.
Yeah. You're hanging
here's
out.
Here's my Wikipedia.
Well, the, you know,
here's my LinkedIn.
We could do a New York one another time.
Yeah. I mean, I would be definitely curious. I would love to do that because I would learn a lot.
Yeah. Well, coming from New York, I already had three in mind. And then I was like, oh, LA. Okay.
Oh, wow. So you were all geared up for
New York. So that's why I had to ask the question.
Sorry.
All good.
We'll have you back for the New York one.
Okay,
for sure. Because you seem to know. I mean, it is weird that I really can't think of any.
Well, it's not like they call themselves a crew or anything.
They should.
Right. But there's a group of 60s people,
right,
and some of them continued working into the 70s, and then some of those people became pretty well known just as personalities outside of any one particular.
They became stars in their own right.
Right, like two of the most famous New York 70s people are Tony Levin and Steve Gadd.
Right, and those were the two I was going to pick.
Right, but also
They all came out to LA, though, too.
Well, they would work in different places, and then there's also, It's interesting because some of those people, just like the scene here in LA, over different periods of time, like one group's kind of heading out, like not doing as much work or moving on to something else. Like, well, I joined a band, or it's like, I'm just doing films now. So like, I'm not, you know, and that's actually continued for some people throughout. Like, you know, you see their progression of kind of where they end up, which actually is true of one of my choices today.
Ooh. And it's also genre-based, too.
Right.
That's true. Yeah, well, we had to narrow it down somehow.
Right.
So, sorry about that.
No, but it's all good.
Let's do it. Let us get into the list. And you guys have both been on the show before, so there's no hard and fast rule about who goes first. So, who wants to go first? Who wants number 10?
I'll give it to David.
He raised his hand, about 6 inches.
I was pointing to Jen.
Oh, that was a point.
I know.
Sorry.
He really takes one finger to point.
But he did, like, the whole gesture.
It's going to be... Okay, go
See,
ahead.
See, it should be videotaped, right? Oh, yeah. Videotaped. What is it? Videoed?
Sure.
Well.
No one needs to... I'm very comfortable with audio only.
But, okay.
What's number 10?
Well,
who's number 10?
In no particular order, I'm choosing a drummer, which many people know, but I chose some things not as well known by him. That would be Jim Gordon.
Oh, my God. Mm. You actually stole my first pick.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine, because it's such an amazing story.
That's okay.
And he just died this year.
Yeah.
2023.
So, where do we go from there?
No, it's good. What did you have to say about him? Because I have a few things.
Well, you know, there's actually a thoroughly researched book coming out on him in the new year by a writer named Joel Selvin, and I just saw a preview of it in Mojo, and it's going to be quite a page-turner. I mean, there's, of course, sadly, the most famous thing about Jim and the first thing in his, you know, obituaries is, like, you know, spent, you know, the last 40 years in prison after killing his mother.
Right. He was undiagnosed,
you know, it's a serious mental illness.
Yeah.
But it's like, that was the first thing mentioned. And I get it, because it's such a sensational thing. It's such a terrible thing. But
he really was
one of the, you know, greatest, you know, session drummers ever. And he's not as well known as some of his contemporaries, partly because of what happened to him.
Right.
And that he essentially, you know, disappeared from consciousness. I mean, in other words, he was alive, but, you know, kind of not communicative with the world. But he has a roughly 20-year period of working, just like everybody else, where he is everywhere.
Yeah, I actually read, he's from Sherman Oaks. So definitely an LA guy.
Yep.
And he began his professional career at age 17. He was a touring drummer for the Everly Brothers.
Yep.
Right.
And he also did cool sessions with them here in LA. And he went to high school with my friend Ruth Ann Friedman.
Oh, sweet.
Who wrote the song Windy. She actually knew
Jim. From the association?
And
yeah, she knew Jim when they were in school.
Oh, wow.
Okay, I it rings a bell. All Things Must Pass. That was him, right?
He's on that too,
He's on that. Yep, yes. He was in Derek and the Dominoes.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that one.
Yeah, which that's actually Derek and the Dominoes is sort of the outgrowth of All Things Must Pass.
Right, it was the band from the All Things Must Pass sessions.
One of the bands, yeah.
And he wrote the piano part for Layla, the coda, the end of Layla.
Oh, okay.
But he didn't actually write it, though.
Right. Controversially, Rita Coolidge says that she wrote it and Jim took it and didn't credit her.
Right.
And I've also heard a story that she got it from Booker T.
Oh, I didn't hear that part.
And they worked together. And I don't know what the real story is, but pretty sure that Jim Gordon didn't write it.
But he does get credit for it. Like when it appears in Goodfellas, he gets,
Right.
He did get
that
money.
Bit.
Yeah.
So,
but he was a protege of Hal Blaine.
Yeah.
And played with the Wrecking Crew, played on Pet Sounds, all
stuff. He's right in there during that thick of it. And he apparently was a very popular choice for double drumming sessions, either with Hal or sometimes with Earl Palmer.
Right.
And he, from everything that I've read, one of the main things about him was he was meticulous in terms of having his stuff together, not just in the playing, but a real stickler for tuning and for, drum sounds.
Pure professional.
Came super prepared. There's actually, I don't have access to it, but there's an amazing story that came out when he died from another great drummer named Andy Newmark, who was replaced on a session by Richard Perry, I think, for Carly Simon. And he was replaced by Jim Gordon. And he actually asked, I think, if he could stay and just watch. And he said he stood, he sat like either in or near the drum booth and just watched Jim play. And he said, I learned more from that than anything else I'd ever done, because this guy was it's like, I need to know how he, I want to see how he does it.
In his time, he was like the best.
Right.
Yeah.
And, one of the things is, I think his musicianship and his involvement in things, it's like, and again, I'm sure, this book will illustrate the highs and the lows. I've read some of the other stories over the years, is that people started seeing the erratic behavior years before, but during crazy times, it's like, oh, well, he's high. But it's like people would just brush it off. It's like, hey, man, that's not cool. But it's like, we got to go to work. Or it's like, okay, get back out there.
Yeah.
But after a while, it just became almost impossible for people to ignore it. And then it just, he started to deteriorate.
Yeah. He had voices.
Yeah. Forever.
Especially from his mother. That was the main voice in his head. Always telling him that, he's not good enough and stuff. And the voices got so bad that he could not drum.
Right.
They wouldn't let him. It was just, it's a tragic tale for sure. And then of course he, killed his mom. But what are we going to hear anyway? Let's cheer everybody up by listening to some music.
Well,
I had Jump Into the Fire from Harry Nilsson, because he played on Nilsson Schmilsson too.
Wow. Oh, okay. Well, I see Classical Gas here too.
Yeah, he played on Classical Gas too.
Yeah.
Is this a steal from you? You have notes? Oh no, you looked them up.
No, don't even, don't look here.
That looks like Wikipedia.
Well, it's a Wikipedia.
No,
so I could be
Wikipedia.
Wrong. I could be totally wrong.
No. Wikipedia is actually an excellent source for basic information. Everything they have is sourced and you can go deeper.
Well,
they're very good about that.
It's
a joke, but it's not.
It is a joke because someone needs to fix what's on there about me
because
it only shows that I've been, I worked with Vertical Horizon for 1 year, but I was working with them for six.
You have to get someone else to fix it because they won't.
Yeah, if anyone knows how to use the Wikipedia site, just please correct that number for me.
Code that, please. Okay, they're not always right. Sorry.
Well,
so what do you have?
Okay, so I have a couple things. Do we go in turns with the choice of song, or do I give you a couple?
We're just playing one song featuring Jim Gordon, and now you decide since it's your pick.
Oh.
Yeah. And then Jennifer's going to get number 9, and that's going to be a different player, and she'll pick the song for that one.
Okay.
So what's the song we're going to hear that tells us what Jim Gordon's all about?
Well, I was going to go with something a little left field, which is not so well known, but Jim played drums on four cuts on a record that an old friend of mine made in 1974. The artist's name is Jerry Riopelle. The record's called Saving Grace. It was recorded here in Los Angeles, I think out at a studio called Devonshire, although they finished up the record at Sound City. And the track that I want you to find is a track called Why Do I Always Leave Home?
All right. Let's check it out. And our friend Jim Gordon, the late, great Jim Gordon, he did die in 2023, is number 10.
Number 10, Jim Gordon.
My mama staked me her best baby boy. Dad worked the phone. My brothers and sisters, they treated me fine. Why do I always leave home? I got in trouble, wore as much as I could. That old right and wrong, the good wasn't bad, oh, but the bad was so good. Why do I always leave home?
It's a bit of a slushy hi-hat, too. It's like a little open.
David, you were just saying...
Right, so like you hear like a fill there atop with like a high-pitched tom, which sounds very much like what's on Ricky Don't Lose That Number, a more well-known song, but more people have heard that.
And that is Ricky on that Steely Dan song.
That's Jim,
and that
is
Jim Gordon.
Jim on Ricky.
It's Ricky.
On Ricky, yeah.
Jim on Ricky, yeah.
It's interesting because, you know, there's a thing about... At that time, people were still... You know, bringing usually in LA, bringing their stuff to sessions. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, oh, they'll have a kit there. It's like you bring it, you know, or your guy brings it, gets it set up. But it's sort of like if somebody had a particular drum or like their cymbal, it's like, oh, bring me the thing that's on, like that we used last week or whatever. Maybe that was one of his things, you know, like just a particular drum that could be tuned high or that would cut through. So, which
his
later
signature. Thing,
yeah, I mean, it could have been. It's very funny. Actually, a good friend of ours, Jeremy Stacey, who is not an LA session guy, but has done sessions in LA, years ago bought a duplicate of Jim's very famous Camco drum kit and then took it to a session and asked Glenn Johns if he wanted to hear it. And he goes like, you play the drums, that's your thing. I just put the mics on them. I don't need to hear the drum set. I'll hear it when we record. He's like, oh, okay.
Nice. But what I noticed from that one track, though, is how the snare just took up so much space. It was so musical just by itself.
Right.
And how it
it's
paired
the
up.
Feel.
The feel was... A lot of drummers have... They find slower tempos challenging like that. And you just felt him just lay it down so perfectly, you know?
Yep. Beautiful. Yeah. Thank you for that, David. Jennifer, you're up next with number 9. Who is it?
Oh, well, we already spoke about him, but I feel like we need to. Hal Blaine.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean,
who?
I think...
Never heard of him.
You know, I hate to sound like, you know, okay, this is typical, but hey, there's a reason why everybody knows about him.
That's why we added the word legendary.
Yes.
We're not going for obscure, necessarily.
And he was... I mean, I don't think it gets more legendary than Hal Blaine.
Yeah.
And it's all because of that signature intro to Be My Baby. And it's still like, I just hearing the song still gives me chills. I think it's one of the best recorded songs ever.
Yes.
And it's probably nice to kind of compare the two. So it might be good to hear Be My Baby or another song and just compare the feel, because, you know, they were kind of, you were saying Jim was...
they did double drummer sessions together. Like,
mm-hmm. I
think also he was like kind of brought in by Hal.
Right.
Hal himself was kind of brought in by Earl Palmer. You know, like brought Hal along and said, like, hey, I can't do this, you should do this.
Paying it forward.
Right. And that, you know, that continued. That was actually the relationship between Jim Keltner and Jeff Porcaro. They would sometimes be stuck on a session and recommend the other.
They're too busy.
I can't do this, call Jeff.
Yeah, I've got... Right.
I can't do this, get Jim.
Yeah.
You know, they were very close.
That's great.
Okay, so I'm kind of...
By the way, I see what you have there, and I love this. I see you have a Spotify playlist.
Yes.
Whoever put those together, because like for each of these musicians, someone has put together a Spotify playlist like featuring like their best tracks.
Yes.
And so, you just... And please, everyone, look at Hal Blaine's playlist. It's unreal.
Oh, I haven't looked at his. I put together one for myself.
Oh, okay, right on.
But now that you mentioned it,
like
maybe I should...
Hundreds of songs,
sure.
And you know, like, hundreds of them. I had, for Hal Blaine, I had The Fifth Dimension, Aquarius. But we could hear...
Let's do Aquarius, then.
Do you want to do that?
Yeah.
But you have some other stuff, like, what was, like... Well, what else did you have there?
What did I have there?
I mean, Be My Baby, obviously.
Well, I love his stuff with the Carpenters, too.
Mm,
and his so work tasteful. With the Carpenters, exactly. It was so tasteful. Mm-hmm. And it had a lot to do with how little he played. Yep. The minimalism that he had on those tracks.
Yeah.
That he really didn't need to do much.
But, I love that.
Yeah, I do, too. You know, it's a lost art.
You guys see the... Wrecking Crew documentary.
Yes,
It was so long, and it needed to be. There was so many stories to tell.
Oh yeah,
but
you know what? I do love. He is a huge part of it, and they talk about different parts of his life too. Let's listen to Aquarius.
You want
to
do that?
I would love to. Yes.
Okay.
It's one of my favorites, actually. So
awesome. Thank you so much to everybody on social media who put down some good listener picks for us. We were asking you guys for your picks. And our friends Joe, Adam, Justin, and JJ say...
JJ says it. Okay.
If JJ says it, it must be true. it's Hal Blaine. And a little bit of The Fifth Dimension.
Number 9, Hal Blaine.
Please don't guide the friends.
I think this is the beginning of his monster kit, which he and a guy designed these, you know, a set of toms with no bottom heads, so we're now known as concert toms, that are tuned, you know, that can be tuned apart in, you know, octaves or thirds, mm-hmm. and that's most famously on the Mark Lindsay Raiders record, Indian Reservation.
Right.
There's
right.
a full
that's that people. Monster yeah, kit. Yes.
Which then, sadly, Ludwig just copied it and started selling a thing called the Octoplus, which is totally ripped off from Hal's kit, but he was the guy that came up with it.
Imitation's the highest form of flattery.
It's a sincerest form of show business.
The thing I remember that was sad, but also kind of just, I had to chuckle in that the Wrecking Crew documentary. He was talking about how in his heyday, he was making like $1 million a week and like just like sessions, like just never ending. That's why he had to give so much to Jim. But he lost it all because he was unfaithful to his wife.
Right, like, that marriage, yeah.
And it was like, I had all this, I had everything, and then I just blew it. You know?
Yeah, he got married and divorced a couple times for sure. And, you know, people, it's like when you're, I've seen, my friend was doing research years ago when it was easier to get this information out of the union, and I've seen logbooks from 66 and 67 of all the studios in LA because the local 47 representative or cop, as some would call them, that would go to every session to make sure who's there, who's working, you know, who's like clocking people in and out. Everybody that was in that circle of people working were literally doing sessions from the beginning of the day, like, you know, before noon.
Oh, wow.
Like people working 2, 3, 4 sessions a day, every day, and then going to play a casual, you know, like a jazz club at night, or do a casual or something, and then just back at it. And it's hard to imagine people working that much.
Yeah, well, Hal said he would get like quadruple scale just because of who he is.
Right, he would start charging more and like weeding out the, you know, the nuisance
right
people. And then also he and his buddy, they sort of helped start the whole modern cartage business of like, I can't get from here to there. It's like, take my other drum kit and get it to that studio and get it set up, which started a whole, that's actually what started SIR.
Yeah. Another one which definitely needs a shout out is his work with Simon and Garfunkel.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Like what he plays on America.
Oh my God. Yeah. I have that on here. Hazy Shade of Winter.
Right.
Which is, funny too, because they were coming out here to record with the LA guys, just to get that group of guys playing. So,
there it is. So number 8 is up next, and I had Jim Gordon.
Sorry.
It's okay. It happens. It's probably going to happen again.
Right.
You know? So I think what I want to do, just because I'm just, every time I hear Edge of 17, I can't get over how tight that guitar is.
Waddy,
Wachtel. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. There's a film out. It's brand new. It's called The Immediate Family. Have you guys seen it?
I have, actually. And it's basically the sequel to The Wrecking, Crew. It's like the next generation of guys, mainly centered around Waddy,
Russ
Kunkel, Lee Sklar, and Danny Kortschmar.
Right.
And who ended up working on so many records and even touring together back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Have you seen it yet, Jen?
No, I'm looking forward
to it. I think it's screening. It's like streaming now.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
you can catch it. Yeah.
I don't know what service it's on, but you can do a search.
Everybody look it up.
Mm-hmm. And there'll be like a home DVD or Blu-ray with extra footage and stuff.
Well, Waddy, a lot of the time played with those guys, but just he himself, like looking at his resume, it's Linda Ronstadt, it's Stevie Nicks, it's Kim Carnes, Randy Newman.
Warren Zevon,
yeah. Iggy Pop, James Taylor, Brian Ferry, Jackson Browne, you know. And I believe he still has that
hair.
Long, curly hair. Very distinctive. Much like Lee Sklar, he's got a very distinctive look. And I cannot get over Edge of 17.
Oh, yeah.
Like, his guitar part makes that, and it's like you could not recreate that with, you know, like AI or whatever, because there is feel to it, but it's like just so perfectly, you know, the I don't know, he's right in that pocket. And he just continues basically for the whole song. I don't know, I can't get over it. What do you think? Do you guys know Waddy?
I've seen him, you know, we've seen him together at Joe's, right?
I met him a couple times and tried helping him with a piece of gear, which was a very hilarious phone call one day. And he just went ahead and did exactly the opposite of what I suggested he do. And it didn't work out. But as his friend said, that's the way it goes. He tried. So I don't know who wrote Edge of 17, if it's just Stevie. But I will say that somebody might have listened to Bring on the Night by the Police before they made that record, because it's a little similar.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
A little chord
progression-y melody-wise, but whatever.
That feel, too. Yeah. Andy Summers.
I think about his feel and just how he fills the space perfectly. But Edge of 17, yeah, you know, I don't associate Waddy with that. That's kind of funny.
Well, that guitar part has become iconic because it was sampled in a Destiny's Child song.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Was that Bootylicious?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. And everyone just knows it. You know, like every generation knows that. Just that riff. And by the way, Stevie Nicks wrote it, in case you were wondering. And it's from 82, so it's definitely after Regatta de Blanc. I don't know. Anyway, Waddy is my pick for number eight.
Edge of 17.
Number eight, Waddy Wachtel.
Ooh, baby, ooh, said ooh. And the days go by like a strand in the wind.
there is. That is Waddy Wachtel in number 8. Number 7 is up now. David Jenkins, what do you want to do? What do you got?
Well, since in the break we were discussing him, and because, you know, we're all bass players, I thought I would mention a gentleman named Bob Glaub, who is in his 50th year of doing sessions and touring and still going very strong. And
excellent.
He has become a good friend in the last 10 years, thanks to my guitar shop job and a bunch of mutual acquaintances.
Yeah, shout out and to True Tone.
Bob has quite the resume, but I picked a couple of things, but we can only pick one.
Yep.
So I figured that I would go for something that's always been a favorite of mine, and that would be from the Linda Ronstadt Mad Love album. And it's a song called How Do I Make You?
Oh, yeah. It's her version of punk rock, right?
A record that has not one but 3 Elvis Costello covers on it.
Wow. Right. Allison and what else?
Talking in the Dark and Party Girl.
Nice.
Of which he was rather uncomplimentary at those covers at the time, but over the years has apologized and regretted being so, you know, unappreciative of the fact that he received a huge check a year later from his publisher.
Wasn't he kind of cranky about her doing Allison?
Like, oh, right. And on another record, she on that record, I can't remember the track lineup, but yeah, she recorded Allison as well. Yeah. But she might have been the first person to cover him.
Yeah.
Certainly the first American, artist.
I think there was some snarky thing he said, or he's like, thanks for the money.
Right.
Or something like
what
that.
Year was that?
This record's 1980, but I think she had cut Allison prior on our previous record.
Oh, okay.
She went to see Elvis and the Attractions when they came and played LA the first time, I think.
Did Peter produce that?
Peter and Val Garay did that record.
Mm. Peter who?
Peter Asher.
Ah, the great Peter Asher. That's great.
Damn.
So what else did... is it Bob?
Well, Bob also has any number since he got started. His first big session was playing on the John Lennon, Phil Spector rock and roll covers record. He plays bass on You Can't Catch Me. And he said that's really where he met Jim Keltner.
In the Lost
Weekend.
So
he felt like that's when he, you know, got his official start.
Yeah. About 50 years ago.
For being a guy in the studio. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, but he's, you know, again, tons of stuff, and he's still working, and he's sort of adjacent to the story in the immediate family movie, because he was like, you know, one of the other guys in that scene. Working, if Lee Sklar was out on tour with somebody, be like, Bob would be doing, you know, a session, or Bob would be doing the other thing, and you know, they crisscross paths over the years, of course. So
yeah, there's a lot of incestual stuff going on in this town,
right,
like in movies and in music, for sure. So we'll hear some Linda.
Here's some Linda Ronstadt.
How Do I Make You? And then what's this gentleman's name again?
Bob Glaub.
There you go. All right, number 7.
Glaub.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Number 7, Bob Glaub. Faster.
Is that Linda doing her Little Richard there?
Kind of. Sounds like it. Yeah.
Well, you know, there. Linda's been known to be so versatile, and she's paid tribute to so many great songwriters and performers. I mean, that big album with all of those Everly Brothers hits.
Yeah.
You know,
it's kind of funny. I guess she, like, over the years, had always said, like, she never considered herself a rock and roll singer at all. But she was certainly great at doing it, but it wasn't what she, you know, it wasn't how she thought of herself. But, you know, they had a run of making.
She was really good at it.
They had a run of making.
Sorry,
so many,
Linda.
So many good records where they would perfectly, you know, pick material and arrange it. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
And I after a while, I'm sure it got to be like, okay, we've done it already. I need a new challenge. But.
Well, she did that. She did, like, opera or something.
Oh, yeah. She did opera and, you know, big band. I mean, she's like.
That's right. The big band album.
And, you know, both those things were, like, huge successes, but she had a ton had of resistance. Like, this is not what we see for you. She's like, I don't care. This is what I'm doing. And she was right.
Well, she definitely earned the right to do that.
She was right every time.
So. That's great. All right, that is Bob Glaub, G-L-A-U-B. Thank you for that. At number seven. Number six is up next. Jennifer, what do you got?
Oh, I have to, okay, I have to mention this guy. He's one of my favorite bass players of all time. The great Nathan East.
Nathan East. I want to learn. This is
another
one.
You don't know. Oh wow. Okay.
Yes,
yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
Please,
so
please. Tell me.
Oh my God. He comes from a musical family. He came from, you know, a jazz background. He was very influenced by, you know, I think he worked with Bob James in the, his band called Foreplay with Bob James. And, you know, he's just such a musical player, but he was also, he's also this rock guy. and the way I discovered him was through listening to all of Eric Clapton's stuff. And it's just really, it was, you know, Eric always had these great bands, but something about Nathan's approach, he had like this
does he play on like Ocean Avenue or what's that album called?
Yeah. Oh, 4621 Ocean Boulevard.
Yeah.
No,
that was before.
Nathan comes in with Eric like in the mid 80s. I think the first record that he's on is the one with Forever Man.
Journeyman. He was in Journeyman.
But even before then, like mid 80s, the record that he did with Phil Collins,
August.
It's the record that's got Forever Man and Waiting for Another Lover. It's called Behind the Sun.
Oh, I don't know that one. Yeah. I don't know the name of it.
It's actually funny. Phil Collins was not approved. They didn't think that he had the commercial touch to work with Eric Clapton.
What?
I guess when the record sales came in for his next solo record, they were okay with him working together.
I have to say, though, Phil Collins, you know, his role in some of those albums, especially August, was he was a horn arranger, right? Didn't he do all the horns?
Well, he's definitely good at that for his own music.
Yeah, and it was like his studio era.
He used the Earth, Wind, and Fire horn section. So I think they may have done, I mean, he may have contributed to the arrangements, but I think they also kind of had their thing going.
Oh, okay.
But it was all kind of flowing around because he was so, he was everywhere. Phil Collins was.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I just love his approach. And that song, It's in the Way That You Use It. And there's like this line where he just like crosses the bar and he just keeps on like walking down. And it's just like, it's the sweetest part of the whole entire song. Mm. It's like, and it's funny because, you know, the progression never really changes throughout the whole song. But where he puts it in just lifts the song to another level. And that's the kind of bass player I love. Someone that kind of, you know, sneaks something in there. What? Oh, he has his hand raised.
Hey guys, so this is the moment where David tells Jennifer that Nathan East did not play on the song It's in the Way That You Use It.
Yeah, because I mean,
that I've already ruined it for you.
Yeah, you really did, dude.
No. You're gonna thank
Way to
me.
Go.
You're going to thank me later.
Whatever.
Wow. Fucking last night's conversation was about, like, you know, feel free to chime in and, like, if there's stuff that you want to, like.
And you're like, he wasn't on that.
I was trying to do it tastefully.
I appreciate. I'm joking, really.
I know
this
you
is
are.
This
a
is
bit.
A little okay. bit.
Nathan East album credits. Oh boy, you guys. Come on.
Last word.
Okay.
Last word. Oh.
Let's be nice.
Okay.
No, you know, we go back.
Yeah.
So.
I figured. Yeah. I can.
This is our thing.
How long? Okay. When did we meet? Like 20.
Well, we met.
2000. Was it 2000 or 2001? Something like that.
What was just before? You were in Virgil Kane.
Virgil Kane. That's right.
You were starting to see the guitar player, but you weren't like living together yet. So that'd be 99, 2000.
Wow, you guys do go way back.
Yep.
Yep. I loaned her my bass amp.
You could record this because this is kind of funny. Not like the other stuff wasn't funny, but yeah.
Right. This is our origin story, right?
I mean, Nathan East was also in Toto.
Oh. Well, like, did he do session work with them?
Yeah, well, like, he was on tour with them. He toured with
after,
them a lot.
After Steve Porcaro passed away.
I mean, like, I'm going to have to look through this whole freaking list.
Actually, you know, this week I've been obsessing on Olivia Newton-John. And there's another there's a classic LA session group of guys that made one or two of her records.
Cool.
But we can only have so many choices, Ben, so I don't want to, you know.
Sorry.
It's all right. It's okay.
This thing has gone off the rails.
Wait, let me just look.
See, the problem is he's played on so much stuff.
I know.
Right. It's hard to sift through. Come on, man. Dive into Nathan East's astonishing bass credits. Okay.
Okay, wait. Forever? Okay, that's a good one. So...
Tears in Heaven Unplugged.
Oh, he was on Footloose.
He plays
on Get Lucky. Oh, Saving All My Love for You.
Plays bass on What I Lied to You by Eurythmics.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
I'm just trying to help.
I know. But
easy Lover.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I think he has a co-write on that.
But that's the thing. Like, it's not like he really does his own thing. He's just playing a line.
Giving you the best that I got.
Oh, yes.
Anita Baker.
He's on that, right?
Yeah.
On that song?
Yeah.
Ooh. Let's do it.
Okay.
Ooh, yeah. No, Baker. Because, you know, Freddie Washington's on that album, too.
Freddie Washington.
Ready, Freddie Washington. He also wrote Forget Me Nots.
Oh, shit.
Oh, Anthony Jackson.
Patrice Russian.
Patrice Russian. Yeah.
Russian.
Yeah. So Freddie Washington was a co-write. Well, actually, he wrote that bass line for Forget Me Nots.
Mm.
So,
right on.
He's also on that album with his, I think another Washington on bass.
He might be a future round choice, so can't spoil it.
Uh-oh.
He's one of your choices, right?
What, Freddie Washington? Yeah. It was going to be, but
right. Can be.
Now we're stuck in Nathan Eastland, though.
Okay, so
you want to do it? Giving you the best that I got.
Well, yeah, because I love that album. I was just listening to it the other day. Okay, yes.
All right.
Let's do it.
Let's do it, everyone.
Places. Scene.
You don't know, you people listening at home have no idea what we just went through to get to this moment.
Well, yeah, it's just...
Hearts were broken. Bones are going to be broken.
Egos were bruised.
But everything's going to be okay.
Going to be okay. That's right.
Yes. Suffice it to say, Nathan East has played on a shitload.
A plethora.
Yes.
Of songs.
Yeah, including Get Lucky, by the way, which I just wanted to say I love the bass on that. But we're going to hear Anita Baker doing Giving You the Best That I Got.
Yes.
And it's Nathan East, number six.
Number six, Nathan East.
Something I can give in exchange for everything you give to me. Read my mind, you make me feel just fine when I think my peace of mind is out of reach. The scales are sometimes unbalanced, and you bear the weight of all that has to be. I hope you see that you can lean on me, and together we can calm the stormy sea.
Yes, beautiful.
Anita Baker. You know, that era, I was just like a metal guy, so I didn't really get...
Not on your radar.
No, time. I mean, I'd heard it, but I was just like, that's not for me, you know. But but now, like, yeah, that's timeless.
Oh, absolutely.
That is Anita Baker giving you the best that I got, featuring Nathan East on bass. Beautiful. So... I don't know if you guys listen to the show, but probably not. Whatever. Screw you guys. No. but no, David, you guys both actually contribute, you know, listener picks and all that. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
But anyway, in the last year or so, the show has undergone a format change. And so now it actually comes out in two parts. And since that is number six, that's the end of part one.
Okay.
So we'll be back next week with part two and picks 5 through 1, everyone. So join us then. But we're out of here for part one. We have one more thing to do, though, and it is the bonus track of the week for part one. This is a song featuring a player that it was voted on by our friends on social media. So you'll hear that now, and we'll be back next week. Say bye to everybody.
Bye.
See you next week. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And until next week, peace out.
As chosen by our listeners on social media, here's the bonus track of the week.
Hey everybody, it's time for the listener pick bonus track of the week, selected by our good friends over there on social media. All right, this has been Top 10 Legendary LA Studio Musicians. Thank you so much to our good friends David Jenkins and Jennifer Jo Oberly. David and Jen will be back with us next week for part two. Everyone look for that in your inbox. Okay, but we have one more thing to do before we get out of here, and it is the bonus track of the week for part one. These are the legendary studio musicians that you guys were voting on over there on social media. We had Tommy Tedesco of the Wrecking Crew fame, played with the Beach Boys, Mamas and Papas, guitar player extraordinaire, Tommy Tedesco. We had Larry Carlton, who many of you may know from some cuts from Steely Dan, Joni Mitchell, Linda Ronstadt, all kinds of smooth stuff from Larry Carlton. We had Steve Lukather, which I'm not going to tell you about because he may win the bonus track of the week for part two. We always let our second place finisher have another shot at it in part two. So I'll tell you all about Steve Lukather next week, one way or the other. But the winner this week, the bonus track is going to come from Earl Palmer. That's right, drummer extraordinaire. Came up in New Orleans, played for Little Richard and Lloyd Price and all those New Orleans Southern area artists, soul artists, R&B artists. He moved to LA and became one of the most in-demand studio drummers out there. He played for Frank Sinatra, Phil Spector, Ray Charles, Sam Cooke, Eddie Cochran, Bobby Day, Jan and Dean, the Beach Boys, Bobby Darin, the Birds, and many, many more. Earl Palmer is amazing. And I'm going to play a little Rockin' Robin to give you a little taste of what Mr. Earl Palmer can do. Pioneer in early rock and roll and absolute legend. Let's give it up for Earl Palmer. The bonus track of the week is Rockin' Robin by Bobby Day. Check it out. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back next week with part two. And until next time, peace out.
Listener pick.
Singing his song. All the little birds on Jay Bird Street love to hear the robin go tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet, rock, rock, rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet, tweet. Blow, rockin' Robin, cause we're really gonna rock up tonight. Every little swallow, every chickadee, every little bird in the tall oak tree, the wise or loud, the big black crow, flap of their wings, singing go, bird, go. Rockin' Robin, rockin' Robin, go rockin' Robin, cause we're really gonna rock tonight. Blow! A pretty little raven at the birdman stand talked him out to do the bop and it's and the Oreo. He rocks in the treetop all day long, popping and a-popping and a-singing his song. All the little birds on Jay Bird Street love to hear the robin go tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet, rock, rock, rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet, tweet. Blow, rockin' Robin, cause we're really gonna rock tonight. Tweet, tweet, tweet. Well, the pretty little raven at the birdman stand taught him out to do the pop and it was grand. Started going steady and bless my soul. He out-bopped the buzzard and the Oreo.